A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 474. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we're talking about the living and the dead. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This is a BBC series from 2016 with a total of six episodes that ran for about 60 minutes each. It has a mixture of ghost stories with some other horror elements like folk horror and paranormal possession type ideas, and has some ongoing elements in there as well.
An interesting mix and an interesting show for us to talk about here on British Invaders.
Absolutely.
So let's give you the setup. It is 1894, and Nathan Appleby and his new wife have returned from London, where they have been living, to his family home, Shepzoy, in the West Country of England. Sadly, they've had to return because his mother is terminally ill, and she does indeed sadly die quite early on in the first episode, leaving the young couple inheriting the house and the very large farm that it is attached to, and gives them an interesting opportunity to try and bring some new ways, some modern ideas to old country habits and farming. Although, obviously, as you would expect, there's some resistance and pushback from the locals on this.
Yes, absolutely. The Applebys seem to be in the position of taking over almost a farming village as being the owners of this farming estate, and they are bringing their influence to bear. At the same time, we have the daughter of the vicar of the neighboring church exhibiting strange behavior as if maybe she is possessed. And Nathan is investigating, and he is a psychologist. That's what he was doing in London. So he is trying to help her for what he is interpreting as mental illness. And this is one of a number of strange and haunting type events that happen around this Shepzoy estate.
Yes, there's quite a lot happening on this house and farm in these six episodes. Life is not going to be straightforward for the Applebys.
That's right.
So let's just run through the main characters. We have Nathan Appleby, played by Colin Morgan. We've seen him play Leo in Humans, a Channel 4 series. We haven't seen him as yet play Merlin in the BBC show of the same name, a long-running series that we may get to at some point. He is Nathan Appleby. He has been working as a psychologist in London, trying to bring some of those skills as a psychologist and a hypnotist to try and help the local people, particularly, as you say, Brian, to help the vicar's daughter.
Yes, and he has quite a journey over the course of the series that we'll see. Charlotte Appleby, played by Charlotte Spencer, is Nathan's wife. She is a talented and very skilled photographer and a very modern woman. When the farm manager dies, she decides to take over day-to-day running of the farm. And she is behind bringing a lot more mechanization and new ideas that bring some resistance from the farm workers. And she's a very important part of this show. The two Applebys have a very key role both in how they interact with everyone else and drive the plot, and also how they interact with each other.
Indeed. Now, let's deal with their neighbours. We have the Reverend Matthew Denning, played by Nicholas Woodson. You will recognise him from quite a lot of stuff he's been in. He's a very well-known character actor. Here, you might remember him as the psychiatrist who interviews Bond in Skyfall. Here he is playing the Reverend Denning, the local vicar, who becomes somewhat of a father figure or a fatherly figure for Nathan, a sort of advisor to him, although they disagree on certain things from time to time. And of course, it's his daughter who seems to be afflicted by some sort of psychological disturbance, or because of the type of show this is she being haunted or possessed?
Absolutely. And that daughter is Harriet Denning, played by Tallulah Haddon, displaying some disturbing behaviors and leading people to believe that she might be possessed by the spirit of an evil man who stalked the area or some such strange thing. And she is one of a few younger characters and different people who come in as potential subjects or victims of hauntings and so on.
Indeed. Now, let's also, while we're at it, talk about some of the farm people. Gideon Langtree, played by Malcolm Story, he is the farm foreman. He's another very senior and respected local figure. Quite a sort of calm and wise character, particularly when situations are getting difficult. He seems to be the calm voice of reason who advises the Applebees. And I think they look to him for an awful lot of support on the farm.
That's right. John Roebuck, played by Steve Oram, is the farm manager and is very resistant to these new ways and new technologies that the Applebees are bringing in from London. And he dies in this quite unpleasant farming accident, which leaves Charlotte to ultimately take over as the new farm manager.
So let's take you further on into some of the six episodes and the six ghost stories that they tell, because this is an episodic show in a way, sort of a haunting of the week type format with a different case or problem for the Applebees to face every week. So if I just give you a flavour, after the initial sort of possession episode, we're going to get stories about ghostly children who died in a nearby tin mine. There's a possibility of a woman who was referred to or regarded as an evil witch who drowned and now seems to have returned to inflict the same punishment on others. And there's other sorts of ghostly, haunting stories in the six episodes. But I should say, this is all while this young couple are adapting to their new roles and the challenges of running this house and farm and introducing new technology to the farming community. And without giving too much away, Brian, I think we can say that the combination of the hauntings and the pressures of running the farm puts quite a strain on a couple.
Yes, it certainly does. And I should say they take the name of this show, The Living and the Dead, very seriously, because we have a lot of the strange things that happen do involve some form of a dead person coming back in some, you know, one form or another. And part of this is that Nathan keeps seeing the ghost of his dead son, Gabriel. Nathan had a previous wife who I believe died of a disease, and a son from that first marriage who died by drowning. And we don't hear too much about the first wife or mourning for her, but we do hear a lot about Nathan dealing with the death of his son and this tragic drowning, and we have a lot of visions of his son Gabriel appearing throughout this, and questions about what actually is Nathan seeing.
Some strange stuff.
And there is also a strange woman in a red coat that Nathan keeps seeing, and we have questions there that will be answered over the course of the series.
Indeed. We're not going to mention too much more about her until our next episode, I think, Brian.
That's right. So getting into our production notes, The Living and the Dead was created by Ashley Farrow, who co-created Life on Mars and its spin-off Ashes to Ashes, which we we've covered, with Matthew Graham, who worked on those as well.
Yeah, they were quite the sort of pairing, those two, working together. Now, Ashley Farrow, we know, grew up in Bristol and the West Country of England, so he was very keen to do a supernatural show and set it in that area. And, of course, he initially thought he'd be writing this with his writing partner, Matthew Graham, again. But interestingly, I suppose, Graham got pulled away to do the series based on Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End for the Sci-Fi Channel. So he was unavailable to work on this show, which meant Ashley Farrow sort of wrote or co-wrote the first four of six episodes. Additional writing on the later episodes by Simon Tyrell, Robert Murphy and Peter McKenna. But judging from the sort of behind-the-scenes videos I've watched, Brian, I think Ashley Farrow very much sort of a showrunner as well as a writer on this series.
Yes, I think so. I think a lot of the project is based on what he was doing. They had two directors for this, with Alice Troughton directing the first three episodes. She is not related to Second Doctor Patrick Troughton. And Sam Donovan directed the final three. So Alice Troughton, she directed a couple of new Doctor Who episodes, The Doctor's Daughter and Midnight, both with David Tennant. She also directed for Torchwood and the Sarah Jane Adventures. We've covered some shows that she's directed for, like In the Flesh and The Midwich Cuckoos. And on American TV, she's directed for Lost in Space, DC's Legends of Tomorrow, and some other things as well. Sam Donovan, I think the only thing we've covered that he's directed for is Utopia, but he's also directed for The Crown and The Last Tango in Halifax. So we have a couple of very good and quite experienced and skilled directors working on this.
And I think that shows in this series, but we'll talk about that more next time.
Yes, absolutely. The series was shot in Bristol with Horton Court in Gloucestershire standing in for Shepsoy, and they also used the nearby St. James the Elder Church. The production was actually troubled by some rather intense weather, as could happen in the UK, and that mirrored some of the difficulties being portrayed on screen, although being caused by the natural rather than the supernatural, but that seemed to happen in this production.
Yeah, interestingly, I think this show sort of covers the four seasons of the year, but they obviously had to do that all in one shoot. But yeah, I think when the scenes for where they had heavy rain, they probably were dealing with that as well at the same time.
Yes.
I'll also mention quite a lot of great work by the hair, makeup and costume departments. And I know from the behind the scenes that there was a very deliberate intention to change Charlotte's dresses from being quite bright and colourful at the start of the series to getting progressively darker and more sombre, reflecting, I think, the tone of the show as things get more difficult for the Applebees.
It also does, I think, reflect pretty well how someone in that situation, being in that era, but wanting to do quite practical things and be out walking around this farm and all of this, it reflects how a woman might dress in that era, in that situation.
Very much so. Now, a couple of other interesting notes from the production. I'll talk about the music for the series, composed by, appropriately enough, a Bristol-based duo called The Insects. And they have used traditional sort of British folk songs, including notably She Moved Through the Fair and a song called The Reaper's Ghost. But they've also, I think, written their own sort of folk music for the title sequence and for other incidental music. And again, without tipping my hand too much, pretty effective stuff, Brian.
Yes, I think the choices that duo made and choosing that duo, I think it was pretty effective for this. The title sequence uses parts of a silent collage film called Mothlight, which was created back in 1963 by the experimental filmmaker Stan Brakhage.
And quite spooky it is, Brian.
Yeah, again, interesting choices of things in here. The Living and the Dead was broadcast weekly on BBC One starting on June 28th, 2016.
Now, sadly, there was only the one series. I think it was even in August of that year, 2016, that the BBC announced it wasn't being renewed for a second season. We'll talk a little bit more about that next time, Brian.
Yes, for sure.
So, availability. If we've tempted you to watch this series in Region 2, again, it's very easy this time. The BBC DVD is £6, the Blu-ray is £10, includes some extra features, some making of films, some behind-the-scenes extras. You can find some of these extras on the BBC website for this series as well. It's not streaming on the BBC iPlayer at the moment, but you can get it streaming again on Amazon and Apple. £2.50 an episode or £12.99 for the whole series in HD. Again, those prices are cheaper if you go for the SD option. And again, the DVD is available to rent from cinemaparadiso.co.uk. So you can buy the DVD or Blu-ray, you can stream it, and you can rent it here in Region 2. If we turn to Region 1, Brian?
There is a Region 1 BBC DVD release, which is available for about $7.50 US or $13 Canadian on Amazon. It is also streaming in high definition on Amazon Prime for $17 for the whole series or $3 per episode. That's only in the US. It is also available in high definition for streaming or download on iTunes. It's $18 Canadian or $3.50 Canadian per episode. And I think the US prices would be similar. Now, it was streaming for free on Tubi, and that's how I watched it, with ads. But it looks like it is not available on Tubi at the moment. But that is something to keep an eye on to see if it shows up on Tubi again.
Interesting. Okay. Plenty of ways to watch it, though, thank goodness.
Yes, some good options there. So next time, we will talk a little bit more about some of the other hauntings and incidents in the series. We will talk about the genre of this show and get into some more spoilers about it and what it leads to in the final episode.
Hints of things to come. Plus, of course, we'll get to our own thoughts and recommendations about this show and whether you should use one of those purchase options we've just discussed to watch it.
Absolutely. Until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com, including the ones that are no longer in the podcast feed. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our Facebook group and join in on some of the conversations. You can also follow us on Threads and Instagram. We are at British_Invaders_podcast on both of those platforms.
Yes, please follow us on the socials, drop by and tell us what you thought of The Living and the Dead, and of course what you think about some of the shows we've got coming up.
Absolutely.
And you can also find us on the Voice of Geeks Network at voguenetwork.com. British Invaders is one of the podcasts they have there, but you'll also find other content, particularly to do with gaming and Twitch streaming and so on, at voguenetwork.com.
Yes, please join us there. So thank you for listening. This is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Thank you very much. Until next time, Eamon in England also signing off.